Hi everyone, it's Lady Curious here with another true crime. This one was a little hard for me to get as much information that I wanted to get about the victims, and I can only actually find a little bit about the murderer. I have missed y'all so much. I am sorry that this is a little bit late. My computer was down for about a week. It was fried and I had to get a new one. Please remember, this video is for educational and documentary purposes only. Do your own research. I've done the best that I could. Today we're going to be talking about the Copley Township, Ohio 10-minute shooting spree that happened August 7th, 2011 through a suburban neighborhood. And my thoughts is the definition of a heinous and haunting event has ever shook this small town. 7 innocent people dead and 1 injured. Over what, you may ask? An estate disagreement. You heard me right. A estate and a property disagreement. As I always say to my listeners, find the truth, no apologies. Let me go ahead and get this started. Michael E. Hance, they called him Mike. A 51-year-old male was identified as the gunman in the shooting. He was described as extremely helpful, but also quiet, strange, eccentric, and not well-liked by the residents of Copley Township. Acquaintances stated he had compulsions that seemed to hint at a previously undiagnosed mental illness. He graduated from Norton High School in 1978 and was voted the most courteous student in the class. In 1997, Hance contacted police about a man threatening him with a gun when he went out to confront him for vandalizing his truck. He had recently been forced to care for his girlfriend's father, who was suffering from dementia, and lost his job at a copy store after it was closed down. He was also having tense relations between his girlfriend's neighbors, Russ and Gertie Johnson. His neighbors said also that he would actually crawl on top of his van and lay on top of his van for hours. To me, that is weird. I mean, it's hot up there, right? Wouldn't that burn your back or something? I don't know. Weird to me. He is currently survived by a sister who lives in Ohio as well. Many neighbors did not like him. They stated he could be out fixing his van or truck or whatever vehicle, and they'd like wave, being really neighborly, and he would just look at you and not wave back. He just seemed really off and rude to people. And that was Mike. At the time this happened, he was actually living with his girlfriend, Rebecca Dieter. Rebecca was a little younger than now, this story has many people involved, okay? I'm going to go ahead and say who the main suspect is, and that is Michael. I will call him Hance this whole video. So it's just easier to identify him as Hance. He is the shooter, okay? He lived with his girlfriend, Rebecca, and they lived in Rebecca's mother and father's home. This is what happened that day. On August 7th, 2011, a mass shooting occurred in Copley Township, Summit County, Ohio, by 51-year-old Michael E. Hance. 7 people were shot dead before the gunman was shot and killed by a Copley police officer, Ben Campbell. The incident occurred in the area of Shockalog Road and Good Enough Avenue on Sunday, August 7th. Hance had 2 handguns. First, he shot Rebecca in her home while she was getting ready for work. One in the back. Well, this woman is resilient. She did not go down with a fight. She will actually be the only sole survivor of this targeted shooting. She worked at the Veterans Administration as a clerk. They have been together, her and Hance, more than a decade. And she still has no clue what made him just explode. She has thoughts about it, but no one does. He just randomly just went off the deep end. There were no signs. She was 49 at the time at the home they shared at about 11 a.m. Rebecca managed to call 911 before escaping to the porch of her house and being shot in the back, after which she pretended to be dead. She went to a local hospital after suffering multiple gunshot wounds. The spree continued at an adjacent house where Hance allegedly shot and killed Autumn Johnson, 16 years of age, and her grandparents, Russell Johnson, who was 67, and Gudrun Johnson. They called her Gertie, though. I'm going to call her Gertie. She's 64, according to Detective Joe Crunt from the first crime scene. Okay, so what happened? After he shot his girlfriend in their house, he ran next door to the Johnsons' house. The Johnsons have been friends of the Dieter family, Rebecca's family, for ages. Okay. He ran next door to their house. And that's when he sees the Johnsons, Gertie and Russ, and he shot them down in their house, dead. Then also, the Johnsons' son, Brian Johnson, who was 44, he was in the house. When he figured out what was going on and everything, he actually ran out of the house and Hance followed him northward where he was shot dead in a nearby driveway. Okay. What I think happened was Brian knew that his daughter Autumn and her friend were outside in the driveway. It's 2011. They're just chilling, sitting there. You know, the car turned on, listening to music, having their own little personal girl time. And when the shooting started to occur, he thought only of his daughter and thought, I need to get to my daughter. And that's why he ran out of the house to go protect his daughter, because he knew, I got to get her out of harm's way before he sees her and tries to hurt her too. But he didn't make it. He killed him before he could make it. And as he passed the driveway, Hance, after he shot Brian down, and that's where he saw Autumn Johnson, that is Brian's daughter, where Brian was trying to go out there to protect her and didn't make it. He saw Autumn Johnson and her friend that was staying over, came over for the day, Amelia Shamboff. They were just sitting in the car chilling, and he shot them both inside the car. A neighbor said that the windows were like shot out of the car, and they were both only 16 years old and went to Copley High School. And that was the second crime scene. The third crime scene was when he followed Rebecca Dieter, her older brother, Craig Dieter, and her nephew, Scott Dieter, were actually visiting from Kentucky. And they weren't inside their house. They were actually next door over at the Johnsons visiting when this happened. Craig was shot and killed in the Johnsons' home with the Johnsons. When Brian ran out of the house, so did the little boy, Scott Dieter, that was only 11 years old. He ran in the house as well. Hance chased Brian down and shot him in the driveway. And then he shot Autumn and Amelia. And then he gave chase to little Scott. 11 years old, y'all. He chased Scott through a swamp into a house that was like not even five houses down from the house they were at. A woman actually took him in and she hid Scott, little Scott, in the basement of her home. But Melanie, the neighbor, tried to deny that Scott was with her before fleeing with her daughters. But Hance found Scott and Deshaun hiding in the basement and killing Scott right in front of Deshaun and leaving Melanie's family alive. As Hance was leaving the house, Officer Ben Campbell, along with former Copley Township policeman Keith Lavery, spotted him. Together, they issued commands, which Hance ignored, raising his gun instead, firing shots at them. In response, Campbell and Lavery shot at Hance with rounds from Campbell's rifle, ultimately killing Hance, he said. Authorities said Hance used two handguns in the shooting. We have no idea what triggered this incident whatsoever. Using two handguns, including a High Point model JHP .45 caliber pistol, which he bought from Sid Moore's Jewelry in a neighboring Barberton, Ohio, 5 days before, and a .357 Magnum six-shot revolver he bought from the same location in 2005. aunts had grown angry over residents' comments about the state of the property he lived in with his girlfriend, Rebecca. Neighbor Carol E. said aunts had been asked to clean up his property by another resident from Gertie Johnson around a month ago, but had thrown her off his property. Johnson related the encounter to Easelman, explaining that she'd never seen Hans so upset. He said, "Get off my property and don't come back." The dispute apparently dated back to the deaths of Rebecca's parents 2 years ago. Her brother Craig wanted to sell the house, but instead Hans and Rebecca moved in. The shooting began before 11 a.m. on Sunday. Craig and his wife Beth had drove Copley from their home in Walton, Kentucky to go over the property dispute and were visiting the Johnsons when the shooting took place. Gilbert Eli, who lives opposite of the Johnsons' home, said he heard gunshots and cries for help as he was about to leave for church. He described finding victims in the driveway of the home, near the garage, and near a vehicle which its windows blown out. The third woman, thought to be Rebecca Dieter, came out of the house and tried to talk to him. Their conversation was ended abruptly when a man followed her out of the house and shot her. Mr. Eli, 76, said, "She was talking to me, and then he come up behind her and shot her, so I figured maybe I'm next." He hid until he could see the gunman had gone. Police arrived on the scene, and Mr. Eli said he heard a second round of shots coming from behind the house. Would have been Hans shooting Brian Johnson at a different house after chasing him down a grassy alley. Detective Joe Prunich told a news conference, "That's one of the puzzles here. Police are trying to determine whether the Johnsons were involved in the property dispute. Authorities yesterday were still trying to work out details of the shooting and a motive for Hans's actions." Comments from police and neighbors helped stitch together a picture of a man prone to conflict and under increasing pressure from neighbors to take his life elsewhere. Hans had worked at a printer shop in Akron, but quit after dispute and didn't work again. Easelman said, although Rebecca Dieter urged him to find a job, he was a little slow but often read textbooks on diseases and medical procedures and tried to get others interested. He also made and drank odd health concoctions and claimed he didn't have to work because he was an inventor. He also seemed constantly under stress, trying to deal with possessions of relatives who had recently died. The suburban block features generally well-kept yards with small houses, some better maintained than others. The dispute apparently dated to the death of Rebecca and Craig Dieter's parents a couple years ago. Rebecca Dieter's brother Craig wanted the house sold, but instead Hans and Rebecca Dieter moved in. Robin Hancock, a formal caregiver for the Dieter's late parents, called Hans an unpleasant, disliked person whose confrontational style led her to stop working for the couple. "He was quiet and strange," said Hancock, who concurred that there was tension over the ownership of the property in Copley, a township of 11,000 just west of Akron. Gertie Johnson spoke frequently of how odd she found Hans, said Sherry Moore, a lifelong friend who now lives in nearby Wadsworth. The nature of the Johnsons' involvement in the property dispute, other than their dismay at the unkeep of their neighbor's property, was unclear. The investigation. Okay, I kind of just read that verbatim verbatim. Like I said, the man was crazy. He was tired of the neighbors barking at him. He didn't want the house sold. I think he felt that he would have nowhere to live and he had no job. And then he said, "Oh, well, I'm dealing with their estate." And so it was all about Rebecca's parents' estate. And I don't know who this guy thought he was. He was even married to Rebecca. I mean, yeah, they've been together for like a decade, but still, he shouldn't be stepping on toes like Rebecca's brother, Craig. It was just weird. There really wasn't an investigation. It was just, you know, it happened on Sunday. That Monday, they told the press who was the killer. They tried to collect as much evidence as they could to try to piece together what happened. You know, this shook a quiet, suburban neighborhood, and it only lasted for 10 minutes. Walked out of his house, shot a lot of people in the next door neighbor's house, and then chased people down the street and shot them. I cannot believe this motherfucker. I'm glad he's gone. But then I'm also like, he should be sitting in prison for the things that he did. And I've looked this case up and no one is talking about this case on YouTube or true crime anywhere. So I thought maybe I could try to bring some light to this horrible thing. Okay, so they can't tell much more until they do autopsies. I didn't really find anything about the autopsies. They just know that they were gunned down. There's not much detail about that I could find. Also, the retired police officer, Keith Lavery, he was also cleared and of the shooting because he shot at Hance as well. It was said that no words can adequately express the loss experienced by the families of the victims and community at large. The police chief, Michael Meir, he described the community as having a very low violent crime rate. Since Hance had no criminal record, he easily cleared a federal background check and took immediate possession of a .45 caliber weapon. Police say federal authorities have been tracing two handguns linked to Hance. East Ohio Pawn Shop said it sold a handgun last week to Hance. Owner Tom Sidmore and Sidmore Jury of Barberton. Nothing seemed unusual about Hance when he came into the store 5 days before Sunday's rampage. Police haven't said why they think Hance began killing on that Sunday. They really do believe. A lot of people believe that it was because he was scared of losing his house and he wanted to fight over his girlfriend's late parents' will, practically. That really, he had nothing to do with. He needed to stay out of that business. And unfortunately, all these people were murdered because of this piece of shit, worthless human. The police looked back on some old police reports that kind of painted the picture of how Michael Hance's mental health was. On May 30th of 2009, 2 years prior, the police went to the home where Hance had become very paranoid about the number of jet contrails in the sky and felt it necessary to notify the authorities about it, aka chemtrails. Also, remember Hancock, the caretaker? She quit, like I said before, because of the unusual weird behavior of Hance. And she's like, F this, I am leaving. This guy's weird. And get this crap. 2 weeks prior to this, it was premeditated because he actually bought the caliber handgun and then went to the shooting range, y'all. And the shooting range said he didn't seem to know how to shoot the gun. And they had to teach him how to shoot it. They also searched Hance's girlfriend's home, where Hance lived. And they found all these really weird notes of, like, weird rambling notes that seemed like he was obsessed with cancer and trying to cure cancer. They really felt like Hance had a delusional disorder, but was never diagnosed or never went to get help for it. He was very strange. And a lot of these issues, if you ever feel like someone is acting weird or off of normal, you might want to say something to somebody. Because if this man might have got some mental health treatment, maybe this wouldn't have happened. That's my opinion. But this man is like, he snapped. The aftermath, residents held a candlelight vigil Sunday evening. Neighbors said residents were shocked and baffled by the shooting and would likely never get a full explanation. Robin Hancock came to the police station in this Northeast Ohio community on Monday to hear updates on the slayings that left 8 dead and 1 injured. That's including Hance. Melanie Akeley will never forget the look in Michael Hance's eyes when he burst into her home a year ago. Burst into her home and turned her world upside down. He was a monster, she said. Begley said she has changed virtually everything about her life. with one notable exception. Since the day Hance fatally shot seven people in their Copley neighborhood, his final victim, 11-year-old Scott Dieter, was killed in the basement of her home, where he sought refuge with her and her children. I will never relive every detail of that day to anyone but Scott's mother, vaguely said. I think I owe her that. I think every mother would want to know the final minutes of her child's life. I want her to know I did my best, but I understand she's not ready yet. I can't imagine what she is going through, losing both her husband and son all in the same day. That must be devastating. But whether it's tomorrow or 10 years from now, I'm willing to talk to her. It's why I never changed my phone number. Little else about Bagley's life has gone unaltered since last August. She moved to a home less than a mile away from the shooting scene, in a more secluded area with fewer neighbors. The residence includes a high-tech alarm system. Those changes help her sleep through the night. I will never forget every second and every minute of that day, no matter how hard I try, Bagley said. She relives how she tried to hide Scott and her children behind the furnace. After Hance broke into the basement, he put a gun to her head. Bagley denied Scott was with her. She then tried to escape while holding her 1 and 3-year-old daughters and instructed her son and Scott to follow her up the stairs to safety. As Hance searched the basement, Bagley said Scott, who must have been paralyzed with fear, did not follow, nor did her son, Deshaun, who later told his mom that someone had to stay with him. By the time Bagley reached the third step, she heard the gunshot. She didn't want to know what happened, but she knew. Scott died just minutes after Hance had killed his father, Craig Dieter, of Kentucky. The family had been visiting relatives in Copley. After the shooting, Bagley moved out of the house and into a hotel. She wouldn't let employees come in to clean her room. Instead, she would ask for clean towels and sheets and do her own housekeeping. When people donated food, the deliveries went through one person, someone she knew. She's suspicious of almost everyone. She said that before the shooting, she stayed home a lot. I wasn't much for going out to clubs and always stayed in the house on New Year's Eve. But when this happened, I realized you aren't even safe in your own home, she said. There are crazy people everywhere. Her mother asked her to move back into the home they shared at the time of the shooting. Bagley's bedroom was in the basement. She told me to take another bedroom, Bagley said. I already couldn't sleep. I knew I would never be able to sleep in that house again. I did not go back. I did go back, but only to get my things. I didn't take everything because it just wasn't worth it. I couldn't stay there too long, Bagley said. Her son went back to home, but gradually. The therapist told me not to pressure him, she said. At first, he would stay outside and play with the dog or go in only to get a drink of water. When he did work his way into the house, he wouldn't go upstairs or downstairs. And one day, he told me he had to do it for himself. He went downstairs, walked through the basement quickly, and came back up. He's never been back inside the house. The house now sits empty. Bagley's mother has moved out. Bagley said her 10-year-old son is doing much better. Deshaun is doing great. He no longer has nightmares. His therapy ended early this year, his mother said. He doesn't talk about the shooting. He told the counselor that he didn't want to upset me, Bagley said. Destiny, her 4-year-old daughter, occasionally will ask something like, remember that man that tried to hurt us and killed the little boy? And I have to remind her that he will not be able to harm us, anybody else, because the police shot him. My brother took her over to the dead man in the driveway to reassure he couldn't hurt anyone anymore. Bagley tried to shield her children from news accounts of the recent shootings in a Colorado movie theater. I turned the television off before they could see it. They don't need to be reminded of that day. As for herself, Bagley said she is doing better. She says she started having nightmares again in June after a television crew asked her to go over every detail of the incident. She refused. They also asked if my son could go over the whole thing, too. She said, absolutely not. I'm not putting him through that again. Faith is engaged and acknowledges she has clung to her fiancé since the shooting. He's a good man. He has been there for me ever since it happened, she said. She credits him for finding a top-of-the-line alarm system, something that will go off at the sound of glass shattering. Recalling that Hans got into her former home by breaking glass in the side door and reaching in to unlock it. I had to find a place that I feel safe, she said. A place to protect my kids better and to help them forget the past and make new memories. She said people ask why she wouldn't tell Hans where the boy was hiding. She has been accused of putting her own kids' lives in jeopardy. It's a mother's instinct to protect. Until you are a mother or a parent, you wouldn't understand, she said. I would hope that if given a similar circumstance that someone would do the same thing for my children, to at least try to protect them. She has spent a lot of time second guessing. What if I had hidden the boy better, under a pile of clothes or toys or behind something, she asked. We went to the basement because it was dark. I thought it would be too dark to see anything or anybody, but Hans had a flashlight. Bagley said there's always a lot of blame to go around after the fact. It's hard to think clearly when you are afraid, but I hope no one ever must go through anything frightening and gruesome as that day. She said it's still hard to accept that Scott Dieter died on her watch. She said her guardian angel that day must have been her father, who died 5 years ago. My dad used to say, bullets don't have no names on them. That man could have shot any of us, but for some reason, he really had it out for that little boy. What could have they have said to this man to make him want to hunt down and kill all of them? A neighbor stated. No one will ever know the real truth of what was going through his mind and why. Tammy Simon, who was at the vigil, said, I just want peace for the family. I don't need to understand why or anything. I have played the 911 calls for you. The 911 calls started at 10:55 a.m. to 11:06 a.m. Because first, it was Rebecca Dieter that called. You'll hear her. And then, that was in the beginning of the video. And then the second one was actually Melanie Bagley. In Rebecca's first interview with the media since the rampage, she spoke in a very soft and thoughtful voice for over 75 minutes. She described what she remembers about the shootings and how she is recovering, both physically and psychologically. She grabbed her landline telephone and walked out to her porch after hearing what Scott Dieter, who would be killed, had said. I'm on the phone with the police, Dieter recalled. I kept saying, he's here. She believes that Hans ran into the house and up the stairs thinking she was still in the shower and looking to kill her. Then she said Hans came running out the door and saw her. He said, Becky? Like a question. Like, oh my God, she got away, she said. Hans ran across the porch towards her, closing to within 3 feet. I looked at him and I looked down, and he had a gun pointed at me, she said. I dropped the phone at that time, and I obviously turned. He was pointing the gun at my chest, but he then hit me in the back. She said she remembers immediately pain. And everything going very slowly and not having any control over her body. Like I was flying off the porch. She caught a glimpse of Hans's face and it was completely emotionless. A single hollow point bullet had entered her back, hit the edge of her spinal column without causing permanent spinal cord damage, and deflected through her left lung. It exited through her left shoulder, shattering bone. Rebecca landed on the driveway, on her left side, the side where she was wounded. I did realize I was still alive, and I saw his feet, she said. Rebecca closed her eyes, so he sort of would think I was dead. She lay on her back and was having great difficulty breathing, and she had two collapsed lungs, one struck by the bullet and the other punctured by a rib fracture in her fall. She rolled over and tried to hold herself up as breathing got increasingly difficult. I remember thinking, if someone doesn't come quickly, I will die. Copley Township Fire Department personnel arrived and began treating her. They saved my life, she said. Rebecca undergone three operations since the shooting, the first to try to repair her shoulder a few days after the shooting, the second in November to replace the joint with artificial shoulder, and the third in late July on her left lung because of continuing breathing difficulties. She has suffered pneumonia and respiratory failure during the year-long ordeal. Recently, she had been using portable oxygen to help her breathe, hopes to be off of it shortly. She has limited mobility of her left side and is not able to lift her left arm much because her rotator cuff was destroyed in the shooting. An employee of the federal agency, Rebecca had been unable to go back to work yet, but hopes to resume soon. This was a year after the shooting. Rebecca said the actions of Hance that day were totally out of character. There was nothing in his behavior that indicated he was planning such an attack. She called it completely unfathomable that the person she spent 22 years with would have or could have actually do something like that. Never once in our time together did I ever fear him. She believed that for some unknown reason, he decided to kill everyone in her immediate family and extended family. That day, the Dieters were planning to go to a family reunion in Pennsylvania. She understands that Hance had packed her car with weapons and survival equipment. When it was decided the group would travel to Pennsylvania in her brother's Greg's car, Hance decided to shoot everyone before they could leave the reunion. She said she is glad police killed Hance because he obviously lost his mind. Christina Kraft began working with Rebecca, admitted to the hospital after the shooting. They continued to meet twice a week. Kraft, a psychologist, said she had been treating Rebecca for PTSD. A year after, truth be told, she is still much better than I've ever imagined, but it will be an ongoing process to help Rebecca work through issues relating to the shootings. With PTSD, memories control the patient. And while we are never able to take the memories away, the goal of treatment of PTSD is for any patient with PTSD to control memories, she said. Right now, there are quite a few memories that are controlling Rebecca. Rebecca said she often thinks that if she had done something, anything differently, perhaps she could have stopped Hance. Kraft reassures her constantly that there was nothing she could have done, changed things. Absolutely under no circumstance did you do anything that led to what happened. Kraft said Rebecca during the interview, right. Rebecca replied, he lost his mind. Kraft said, part of PTSD is re-experiencing over and over again. The guilt, the anxiety, the avoidance. Rebecca has been journaling and recently started taking a self-defense class as part of her therapy. She said she had been numb for much of the year after the shooting, but has begun to feel the deep pain associated with such an incident and the loss of so many family members and friends. We lost many great people that day, she said. The loss is almost exponential, and that all of these people were good, special people. Rebecca said there are no issues within the family over the estate of her parents, as she had begun reporting at the time of the shooting. Her mother, Helen, had died in 2008, and her father, Wayne, died the next year. Becky said both of her siblings want to remain in the family house where she had lived since the age of 8. She had started grief counseling over the loss of her parents in 2011. She said she was grateful her parents were gone when the shootings happened. It is such a horrible tragedy, and I believe they were in heaven greeting everyone we lost that day. Rebecca said she is also very thankful to her sister and her brother-in-law, whom she lives in Northeast Ohio. They have helped and supported her throughout the ordeal. She is thankful as well to the medical teams and the hospital and the Copley police and the fire departments, the victim assistance program, and the community for their support. She met with Copley Police Officer Ben Campbell to thank him during that year. Campbell is the officer who shot Hance in March just before what would have been Scott and Craig's birthdays. She and Kraft visited a memorial bench, Copley Circle, where they placed balloons and cards and read prayers and poems. I want to thank everyone who has been praying for us, sending us positive energy and good karma, Rebecca said. I believe that is why I am here today, and that I continue to pray all on the families affected, and I hope others will continue to do so. The losses that occurred a year ago affected the entire region, she said. They were leaders in their communities, with the Boy Scouts and their churches, she said. It affected anyone who was from around the area because this tragedy happened here, which means it could have happened to anyone, anywhere. That is Rebecca's story of being the lone survivor of a horrible massacre. I want to go over everybody, all of the victims. I don't have much to say about each person, but I do have who they were and some little things about each person. Because we want to remember all these innocent people. First, Gudrun Gertie Johnson was 64. She was the neighbor of Hance, who complained to Hance about cleaning up his property. A friend of the Johnson said Gertie could always make people laugh, and she was always telling stories about her family. She really loved her family. Gertie was very loving and kind and loads of fun to be around. Gertie was originally from Germany and met her husband when he was in the military. She was a receptionist at a furniture store for 2 decades. And Russell Johnson, they called him Russ, was 67. And he was also a neighbor of Hance, and he was Gertie's husband. Russ Johnson was a devoted father who helped coach their children in sports, took them camping, and rode motorbikes with them. He had undergone heart surgeries in recent years and was careful about his health. He was eating healthy and exercising. And then just a tragedy like this happens. Russ ran a upholstery business behind his house. Russ and Gertie were together for 48 years when this tragedy happened to them. Brian Johnson was Russ and Gertie's son. He was 44. He had one child, Autumn. I don't really know a whole bunch about Brian. All the pictures, you can see that he seems to love his family and to love his life and to love his daughter. They really loved going to BMX motorbikes and races and things like that every Tuesday. And they were part of the BMX motorbike family. Autumn Johnson was the one that was in competitions. She was only 16, and she just seemed like the sweetest girl. She had a boyfriend at the time. There are pictures of her and her boyfriend that you will see. I also have like little things that she would write on Facebook. She was really into social media, and she really loved doing sport. She was tomboyish, but then she loved to get dolled up, and she loved music. She loved competition, and you'll see that in her photos. Amelia Shambaugh, that was Autumn's friend, that was over at her house at the time. She was 16. Amelia was born June 14th, 1995. She had a strong, happy, and supportive family life. She was dedicated to sharing high ideals that created her wonderful, warm personality. She radiated strong inner qualities and was always so mature in her thinking and actions. She loved her sister, Lindsay, and her animals, Kaylee, Mia, and Millie. She was very artistic and loved woodworking. She had a big heart and giving soul. Her outlook on life was positive and optimistic. She loved to have fun, and her laughter was contagious. She had many friends that loved her. She left behind her mother, Linda, and her father, Anthony, and her sister, Lindsay, and many more family members, and also her 3 pets. Craig Dieter was the older brother of Rebecca. He was 51. He was married. He had an only child, and that would be Scott. They were visiting from Kentucky at the time, so they had a whole other life in a different state. He was a United States Army captain, veteran. He was an engineer that worked for a company called Rockton. He seemed like he loved life, and a lot of pictures that I saw of Craig, he loved boating and fishing and just loved to be around the people he loved. Scott Dieter was Craig Dieter's son. He was 11 years old. A lot of neighbors remember Scott being such a sweet boy and had nice parents. I don't really have a lot about Scott. Probably just a typical boy. I'm sure he liked video games and loved getting dirty. But that's just speculation. There's really not much that I found out about Scott, to be honest. Not many photos of him either. I wish I knew more. He seemed just to be a happy boy, and he loved his dad. We have guns in my house. I am a person that believes in the Second Amendment, and I'm telling you, if someone came into my house, they'd be dead. So I just wish that they had the chance to protect themselves. A chance. I mean, you had two veterans in the house. It's not their fault. It happened so quick, y'all. Like, it was literally, let me shoot my girlfriend on the porch of her house, and then he walked right next door, opened the door, and just shot at people. That's just insane to me. You get to just be sitting in your house, and because you don't have your door locked, or you think, oh, I'm in a small town, I'm safe, I don't need to lock my doors, my family are coming in and out, boom, someone just walk in. But it sucks that they knew him. The last person they saw was this piece of shit holding a gun and just shooting them. Like, no big deal. Like, he was cut off from reality, is all I can say. And then the fact, the chase after an 11-year-old boy after he shot all these people is insane. I am so happy that the family that he went in to get refuge is okay. And that Hans didn't just murder them all too. And this girl did her best. He put her life on the line to try to protect this little boy. And she, till this day, feels like she didn't do enough. And you just did what you could do. You do what you can do. Be a good neighbor. Protect. You see someone else's child in danger. Protect them. Stand up. There were never any type of court dates because he was killed. And he's where he belongs, in a grave. This man just wanted to annihilate an entire family. Two families. Two families. That's what he tried to do. I want to tell the members of the family that have survived and that are left. I'm very sorry that this happened to your family. And I will be praying for your healing. And I am happy that I was able to tell their story a little bit. To get their names and what happened to them out there a little bit where their memories won't be lost. And this was a serious tragedy. And my heart is with y'all. That's the end of this case. I know I might have said some information on repeat, and I'm sorry about that, but trying to get this information in order was madness, is all I can say. I love y'all very much. See y'all in the next one. Please like and subscribe if you want to hear more. If you have any case suggestions, please go onto my website. It will be down below, CuriousRavenProductionsLLC.com. There is a form that you can fill out there if you want me to research a case and bring some light to it. And you can also leave it in the comments. Please go follow me on Instagram. At Lady Curious YT. Thank y'all so much. Love y'all so much. Please stay safe.